Hey, and welcome
Blog
to the
Talk Radio.
It's 8 p.m. on Wednesday, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the K Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio. My name is Eric Payne. I am one of the co-hosts, and you are?
I am K Thompson, and welcome once again to K Thompson Live, everyone. We do have a dynamite program for you tonight, and we're going to be starting it right away. We're also going to be talking to Wayne Gilman, who's the former news director from WIBBLS, and he is one of our co-hosts here. And, of course, Eric Penny is my co-host, and it's me, Kay Thompson. And we're going to be talking to Bishop Jethro James, who is the bishop at Paradise Baptist Church in Newark. Now, he serves as a chaplain for the New Jersey State Police. He is advisor to the recruiting unit and the Attorney General's office dealing with candidates for the state police. He's on the faith-based Homeland Security Committee. He's also on the Advisory Council for Essex County, and he has been reappointed by the Board of Chosen Peoples of Essex County. Essex County Ethics Committee has been appointed by the Supreme Court. And he is a wonderful speaker, and he has a lot to say, so as soon as we get him on the show, we are going to be going right to him.
Right. Let's talk about a couple of issues in the press, a couple of current issues, which we like to do, give little comments on current issues and events that are going on. And, you know, we have this week has been part of one of the things in the media was this thing with this lady in Spokane, Washington, who was NAACP director of the NAACP out there, and she got outed by her parents as really being white. And she was passing for black all this time. And, you know, to me, the story just seems to be getting crazier and crazier. She didn't really want to come out and say she was white. She identified with black and all this kind of double talk every time I've seen her speak. And, you know, it kind of, to me, in my mind, might take away from some of the good work that she was attempting to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fact that she sued Howard University when she was identifying as white.
Mm-hmm.
So sued Howard University for whatever reason. And they say it might not have been about race as much as it was about a sexual discrimination lawsuit, but the race was the easier way to go. But my personal opinion is that it's not really a news story like the news is trying to make it out to be. And she lied. She's trying to mislead people that she's black. And every time she's had an opportunity to just come out and say point blank, she always says something different, which to me kind of, you know, when people are kind of wishy-washy with the truth and stuff, that's kind of, you know, there's something not to trust there when people kind of do that.
And, you know, Eric, at first I was feeling, well, you know, she was doing a good job, just let her be. But, you know, I think she's sounding very, very confused now.
Right.
You know, it doesn't even, what she's saying, really, you want to question it, it doesn't seem to make sense. Now her parents have said, and they've said before, that no, she is a white woman.
Right.
And then she was hemming and hawing about who she was.
Right.
So, and then I thought, well, maybe she's doing a good job out there, and they remember that branch of the NAACP, they did, you know, put her in office, so she had to be doing something. But then there's this whole confusion. It's really a crazy kind of situation. You don't know whether, you know, what to do with her.
It seems as though she's intentionally trying to be vague. And that really is, you know, it kind of lends to a credibility and honesty.
That's
right. Can you
really
trust what she's saying? Can you really, you know, depend on her? And it also, unfortunately, causes some people to question the work that she's done. Why was she really doing it? Or, you know, I mean, there's any number of things to consider why she might have decided to identify with black people. And, you know, it just seems kind of bizarre. Wayne Gilman, our other co-host, is that you? Let's get you in on this. What do you think about this girl, this white lady passing for black that was headed to NAACP?
I tell you, Eric, that is the $64,000 question of the week. Major media has been covering it like it was something comparable to a war. and I don't understand it. I tell you, I have no problems personally with her other than the fact that she lied.
I got
this thing about people. I have this thing about people who lie. It could be my ex-wife. It could be my girlfriend. It could be my sisters. You know, I just don't like people who lie. And that's it. But white folks have been passing for black in some instances, and a lot of blacks have been passing for white. So, you know, it is what it is. I think her heart is in the right direction. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I didn't get to hear all of your thoughts, though, Eric.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. You know, when somebody is intentionally trying to mislead people, that always makes me wonder. Someone who never gives a committal answer, or who's always kind of vague, kind of whatever. You know, I'm always wondering what's up with. I'm always wondering what's up with those people, and you know, it kind of makes you not to want to trust them. And it really makes you doubt everything they've done, because the more you listen to her talk, the more confused the whole or convoluted. You know, you can't decide to be black when it's convenient.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's what she did, but and this is why, you know, people talk about civil rights of people from their sexual perspective and this type of thing, but. With a racial identity, you can't change that. You can't suddenly blend in.
You're absolutely
You can't suddenly blend in a survival situation. If somebody says, get the blackie, then a couple of us are probably going to stand out in an all-white room. And she might be able to blend in. And maybe she'll blend in with the white people and try to go get a rope or a knife to cut us out or whatever, and she probably seems like that type of person. I'm talking about that type of blending person who helps out.
Yeah.
You know, maybe she's probably like that type of person, but still, you know, you can't really get this transracial, all this kind of nut, whatever. Anyway, I don't want to argue.
You know, but anyway, I really think, Wayne, that she is very confused, and as a matter of fact, she's going back and forth. She was caught in a lie. And, you know, it almost seems as if she, you know, she just does not want, she's just confused, you know?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And you say that she's doing a good job out there, so what is the problem? But then again, all this stuff came up about her background, so the whole situation is confusing, and I'm sorry that she is in that situation, because she really needs to see somewhat about who she is, what she is, and where she comes from. And, you know, we're also going to be... we're going to be asking Bishop Jeff O'James what he feels about this too, because he is quite alert and man, and he is of the church, so maybe we can have that kind of a different viewpoint. You know, do you think, Eric?
Yeah, when we get him.
Yeah, we want to go to him as soon as he, you know, and I think he's standing by. Hello, are you there, Jeffra? Reverend?
I'm here.
How are you?
I'm enjoying the conversation thus far.
Yeah. What do you think about this, Bishop James? I'll keep on wanting to say Jethro. But Bishop James,
It's all right. Just don't call me late for dinner. the reality is this, that integrity is a key part of anybody's personality. Why she wants to be black, I don't know. There were always Caucasian people in the NAACP. And so it's not a problem. Be who you are and what you are. As I heard the brother say earlier, if they said, well, we're getting ready to kill up all the blacks, I know I wouldn't have a shot. The melanoma of my skin is not going to allow me to look any different than I look. I think it becomes a credibility piece. And I've never heard of transracial. Either you're black, if you're Hispanic, you're Hispanic. If you're Latino, you're Latino. And so there's no such thing as transracial. I think that we're probably looking for words to be inclusive. And why so much coverage? For this one young lady, I really think that she has some identity problems with herself, and she probably needs some professional help. But to spend all the time on something like that, if you want to talk about things in the black community, let's talk about the 10,400 blacks that have been murdered by other blacks. We need to talk about the police that are killing blacks, but we need to talk about blacks that are murdering blacks. We need to have those kinds of conversations and look at reality. Those are the kinds of things. We need to talk about the wonderful woman in Baltimore who came and got her son out of the street because he could have been the next body that was laid in the street. All of those things matter, but to just talk about her and her racial identity, it talks about candor and integrity.
Well, I have to agree with the bishop, if I might, Kay and Eric. Yeah. I you know, the thing is, it's really, really despicable that, you know, the media in itself has gone this far. I can't imagine the news being this slow this week that has been the center of attention. And I also think that, you know, we have to knock on the knuckles of the NAACP. They seem to have a problem of a vetting problem. They can't seem to vet people out thoroughly. I mean, they just suffered the scandal last year with the Jewish gentleman who owned the Clippers, you know, and now on the heels of that, you know, we have this phenomenon. And
what was that?
You
know, How was the NAACP with the Donald Sterling? Would you say they have a problem with vetting?
Yeah. In other words, they didn't do a thorough background check on him. All they were concerned about was getting money out of them. Out of him.
I'm
sorry.
So you're talking about when he bought the Clippers?
Well, there was a relationship because, you know, he went around saying, listen, I'm not prejudiced. I have this association with the local chapter of the NAACP. You know, this is something that we had covered, and it just seems like for some reason, you know, I don't know, it's not on the national level, but it just seems like there's a problem with the local chapters. But there is a history, as Bishop pointed out, where blacks and whites have worked to seek inclusion in society under the banner of the NAACP. But we can't afford, with all the issues that are facing us as a society, to be caught out there with a problem, you know, of not thoroughly vetting people out who represent us to draw attention to the confusion within our community.
Yeah,
just my thoughts.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily. I agree. There's vetting in probably certain chapters. As in any big organization, I wouldn't really single out the NAACP as a whole, but obviously in certain chapters and the Los Angeles chapter, the whole situation with Donald Sterling, the Los Angeles chapter, the NAACP, they have a reputation, as far as I'm concerned, of doing kind of questionably or kind of wacky thing. But I agree that the whole effort and energy spent on this nonsense about this woman who has a identity problem or playing identity games is just a waste of time and takes away from the issue of black people. And it's interesting how the media directs us to focus on these idiotic issues sometimes. And you really can see them at work and how they kind of decide that this is going to be the story of the day and everybody covers the same story over and over again. And so it's just kind of interesting. And I'd like to move on to another thing that was in another thing that was in the press earlier this week. We have a number of minutes left in the show, so let's talk about some of these hot topics. With Donald Trump, the ringmaster, Barnum and Bailey, coming out to announce his presidential bid, as well as Jeb Bush, who obviously was overshadowed by the Foxhead clown, as I like to refer to him. And it's just a really remarkably ridiculous, I mean, that like I said, it's the media again. They go and follow this guy, and they're actually going to talk to him now. Now some of the follow-up questions about him, his comments about Mexicans and things, are they're talking to him like he's a real candidate, like he's really going to run. This is the lunacy in how they try to drive the public, just like masses of cattle, almost in terms of the mentality that we should have. But I'm interested to hear both of you gentlemen, your perspective on that.
If I may, Bishop James, if I may.
Yes.
The amazing thing is let's talk about Trump Towers, the casino here in New Jersey, in Atlantic City. It's gone. Donald has made some good business decisions, and Donald has made some bad business decisions. It's one thing, as he stated in the press conference, that he has plenty of money and he spends his own money. But the reality, what if he was spending the national treasury? He's made some bad business decisions. The other thing is that he looked like a braggadocious buffoon when he started talking about how much money he has. And he can get a website done for $3. Well, come help some of the faith-based community. Many of us pay much more for our websites and to get them up. Do something for some poor people. Do something. If you have so much money, you talked about the president leaving office early. You have a golf course that's right next to the White House. I found that amazing. What makes him a qualified candidate for the office of president other than he's been a businessman, some of the business good, some of the business bad, and he's filthy rich. I think that was amazing to me. And for him to start off with how much money I have. The Koch brothers have, well, and they're promising $1 billion to whoever wins best in the primary to whomever they decide to run. But let's be realistic. You can't run for anything, including a local mayor, unless you have close to $1 million, unless you're in Chicken Switch somewhere. But in a city like Newark, New York City, oh, my God, you need tens of millions. And if you think about running for a national office, you need tens and maybe even $100 million. And so we really need to take a look at someone like a Donald Trump, who you're going to have to take serious only because he has that much money. Whether he'd be a good leader, absolutely not.
I happen to agree with the bishop, if I might. I agree with you, Eric. I think the media again is taking this for a touchdown as a circus event, and it's comparable to the ESPN reporter asking LeBron James during Game 5 when he was interviewed after suffering a head cut, "Are you in pain?" I mean, what do you expect? You know, it's to me, I just really find it so absurd that he needs to be in every contest that has gone on in the last 20 some odd years, if I could, you know, if memory serves. You know, I dropped support with Donald Trump going back to the Central Park Five, and the buffoonery that he used, you know, basically right wing media to elevate a point about how he felt that these poor kids of color were guilty of doing what the media created this buzzword, wilding, in Central Park, involved in this rape. And for him to even regurgitate it less than a year ago when a settlement was sought with the city and was agreed to, you know, just says a lot about who he is and his lack of sensitivity. I mean, with all of his real estate background and money, if he should be so lucky to get elected, he should do something about the homeless situation throughout the country, not just here in New York.
Yeah, but I want to go to the bishop now and talk about the state police. You are the chaplain for the New Jersey State Police, Bishop James. So tell us, what is the status of that in light of all these killings by young black male by members of the police department? Do you have any feelings about that, any comments about that? And where did
you... Yes.
Go ahead, please. No, I certainly do.
I'm still a chaplain with the New Jersey State Police. In addition, I'm part of a special committee put together out of the State Attorney General, Attorney General John Hoffman, Acting Attorney General John Hoffman, and have been around for the last few attorney generals to actually look at the state police recruiting methods, looking at their academy, looking at the way, quote-unquote, they do things. As a matter of fact, have some questions even to this day and constantly working. As you know, New Jersey has the dubious honors of being home of the official racial profiling decree with the Justice Department. Officers have always killed us. Folks have always done that to us. The problem is, and notice I said officers, it's not always white officers. They have some black officers that are just as bad, because us sick massa ain't us. You know, it's massa, beat him now, massa, you know, that type of thing. But one of the things that I give John Hoffman credit for, Attorney General Hoffman here in the state of New Jersey, before any trooper boarded a bus going to Baltimore, as a request of the governor to Governor Christie, and of course John Hoffman is his attorney general, before there was one state trooper on a bus, there was a conference call for those of us on this committee to talk about straight up, what should happen. And one of the first questions I said to them, what is the assignment of the troopers, if you will? What is the racial makeup of the troopers, if you will? The what-if syndrome. What if one of our troopers get involved in something and they happen to be the one to kill an African-American or any person? I needed to know answers to that. What, you know, who are we meeting with? Who do you know within the city? And, of course, as you know, Kay, I'm president of an organization. We are the parent of the Black Ministers Conference, the North Jersey Committee of Black Churchmen. And so we wanted to know who, what, when, where, how. We also have contacts. One of my members speaks to Pastor Jamal Bryan every day. They talk. And so we had connects within the community. Don't come in as so often folks do and tell us what's best for us. And the numbers, and I'll be real honest, the numbers in the New Jersey State Police are not great. When you look at our command staff, those are the folks that are in charge. Some say it's 60-some people, some say it's 90-some people. But there's less than 4 African-Americans in major leadership, and all of them will be eligible to go in the next 3 or 4 years, and there's none on the horizon. When you look at the academy staff and how they do things, they've said to me that they've put together a plan for promotion. And I said to them, you can discriminate with a promotion plan, because the way it works, you have, let's say, 8 people that fit the criteria, and I only have to pick one of the 8. And so if you my boy and you my girl and you number 8, I don't need to come up with number 1. I can choose number 8 and make him or her some type of commander and whatnot. And so I have some real concerns and have expressed them to the Attorney General, and waiting for a sit down to get back, because one of the things I said to them is, I'm not here to be your boy, and I'm real happy, you know, with the credentials and all that, but y'all sent for me. And since y'all sent for me, I've got to tell the truth. And so you catch it from both sides sometimes. Your people, you know, you're not black enough. And I'm just being real. But I'm there for all the people, because if we do it right. And then something that I've said, an old bigot can recognize a young bigot, and you can groom him or her to take your place. And so as you sit around the table in the halls of power and leadership, and it's only God that brought me to that table, but I'm there to speak truth to power. If not, you know, I might as well skin and grin and get it what's in it for me. No, it's what's in it for us. I said this to a young minister. He was pretty much building a monument to himself, and I said, you shouldn't do that. And he said, what's wrong with that? I said, build your people up and let them build your monument.
Yeah. Bishop, about how many, what's the numerical rundown on the state police in terms of blacks, Latinos, whites, and also women?
Now, that's a big issue. Especially minority women. The last class that graduated, I think we graduated something like 11 minorities out of 148. I think there was only one African-American female out of all of that. Some of the things that I find wrong, if you will, that too many of our folks, our young people, have a candor issue. They, you know, to be totally honest, because they only need one incident to keep you out, and you're done. The other piece I found out, too many quasi-bushy parents. We've sent our kids to the best school. This is the career. They have a little money. But they don't think that little Nene and little Fufu should be made to run with everybody else. I point out that their Caucasian counterparts are running the same area. And so you can't expect what I call the bed of ease because you have an education. The other piece is that if you've been in the military have a one-up on you to start with. And so we're looking at all of that. So when it comes down to the numbers in the last couple of classes, they've been falling off, and that's a major concern. And I'm asking why. I'm asking the why. Show me. I don't want to hear by numbers. The other piece of it is the way it works, they have a pool. And let's say 500 of us make that pool. We get all the way through to now what they call the invitation into the academy. There's only 200 slots. So what I do, you get a letter, and we tell you you're still considered and you know, for the next class, but the state police is funded through the legislature. So if they don't vote in a budget for another class, you could be hung out there for years. Now, you've done everything correctly, but you have to be employed. And so many, especially the best and the brightest of our community, they get jobs in other places. And so we're really looking at that.
Does there know a hiring quota system that's required, mandated by law, in terms of the state police, the numbers of state police that are of minority descent? There's no legal requirement?
No, the consent decree, though, does require that the state police, and I believe I'm quoting correctly from the decree, I don't have it in front of me, that the state police must reflect the communities in which they serve. And the problem is that they have not satisfied me with the answer. If I'm part of that 500, how do you get down to the 200? What is the criteria that says only 200 of us get invited? Is it the top 200? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. If you're a veteran, as I said, you go first. And I don't have a problem with that. I really don't have a problem with that because that's the law. However, I do have a problem with what you're going to do with the rest of us. You know, we did everything correctly also. We just didn't go to the service. And as I said, when I look at the top tier of the state police in New Jersey, there is, I think, two African-American lieutenant colonels. I could be wrong. I don't think there's any majors left. I think they're all pretty much retired. And there's about three or four captains, and that's it. And out of 68 senior officers, I think two Hispanics. That's it. And
wow.
So the folks in charge don't look like me. And these are people that impact your career, and they can find a reason. And the Attorney General and I, we talk on a regular. And if I don't like something, I say it. I was told once if I kept my mouth shut, I'd probably go so much further. I told somebody I never thought I'd get this far.
What is the process for entry, you know, for being considered a member of the state police? I mean, what does the person have to go through? What about the educational background?
The educational requirement, unless you're military, you must have a degree. You must have a degree from a four-year college or working on a degree. You must be 21 years of age. You must finish the academy before your 35th birthday. You must have a squeaky clean record. There is no such thing in the New Jersey State Police as having an expungement or a sealed case dealing with any type of injustice. It does not exist. They open everything for your background, and you get a letter being told that you didn't pass the background check. They won't go into your case. You must have clean credit or an explanation for why your credit is bad. For example, a young man, I call him, just kick him out of the process, but his father passed. His mother was about to lose the house that he grew up in, and so he signed on. And, of course, when you ran the credit report, his name came up with all this delinquency when it comes down to the house, but that was explainable. The other thing with the academy, you get $880 every 2 weeks. If you're married, if you're just living alone, you've got to be able to explain how you can pay your bills off of that. You're in the academy for 26 weeks, and you're there from Monday 6 o'clock in the morning till Friday night, and you finish up. You must report back at 6 o'clock. A lot of the problems that we run into, you go back to the neighborhood that you came from, you get caught out celebrating, you get caught in DWI, you get caught with some crazy stuff. We see it all the time. And then you get some folks that said, look, I'm just not going back. I had a kid, he needed a running shoe. The running shoe was $100-some. He showed up here at my office at the church. I gave him the $100-some. He bought the running shoe on Saturday and dropped out the academy on Wednesday. Mm. I mean, I'm seeing, integral issues. We had another young man. Anything you bring in, if you bring mama's, homemade cake in, it's considered contraband. You can't bring it into the academy. You can't bring cell phones into the academy. He had a cell phone. He was so in love, he called his girlfriend. He got busted with the cell phone. They would have ran him until his legs fell off. But then he starts telling on everybody that ever used the cell phone. That talks about integrity. And so they all got kicked out, all brothers, of course. That's the craziness.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. You mentioned just a moment ago that these recruits are paid fewer than $1,000 once every 2 weeks, and they're asked to explain how they could survive on that while they're going through this training process. Did I hear you correctly?
Yes, sir. You heard
me
correctly.
And the thing is, where on this planet can one survive in this economy on that amount of money? And why is the government paying more?
Well, let me share this. Many of them are still home with mama and daddy. Many of them are that are married find themselves with a working spouse, or the family jumps in for the 26 weeks. But that's how they make it. That's how they make it. Some of the things that they have to do, and then there's groups like my group. And individuals like myself that actually what I do is meet with the parents. I throw a luncheon here at the church. I meet with the parents, the significant others, and whomever, because they need to know what they're going into to start with. They need to know what they're up against to start with. They need to know that if they need help, they need help to start with. And as I said, some folks said, that's not for my baby. I didn't send my baby to school. In New Jersey, the State Police Academy is said to be, if not the toughest in the nation, one of the toughest. It's equivalent to Special Forces training.
Wow.
Boy,
didn't know that.
Yeah.
So what can you do about that? You can finish the state police.
There's nothing you can do about that. One of the things that I pointed out to the folks that I talk to, if the Caucasian is running the same mile you're running, you can't say that his mile is longer than yours.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say, and see, this is the mistake that so many parents make. He comes in and he's busted. He comes in and he's dead tired. He comes in, well, that's all part of it. And I said to a friend of my son, I said, look, if they kill you, they're going to have to eat you bones and all, because that's a crime. So that they can't do. You've got to look at the person that's running next to you and say, okay, if he or she is doing it, what precludes me from doing it? The next thing you do, you find yourself a partner. We're in class together. It's the same old thing. We just recently, we had a young man that passed away in a car accident, trooper, 24 years old, brilliant young man. He had shin splints, running in the academy. He had teammates, guys that said, hey, he's not going to be the last guy in the run. Now, everybody was in time, but you're not going to be the last guy. We're going to pick each other up. Someone that's good learning the criminal code. Well, we can get together on the weekend, and when we go home, you know, everything we do is dealing with the criminal code. What we have put in place, African Americans don't swim well. Well, we put in place remedial swimming courses that we have a few schools that have pools, we have a few churches that have pools, and what we've done, we said on the weekend, we're gonna get you swimming lessons. You choose not to go, but that's the fact. One young man said, why do I have to swim? I said, okay, my car just went off the creek. You're the first one there. Were you going to wait for somebody to come in and get me? You know, there's a reason. Everything they do, there's a reason for it. For example, I think the boxing ring, I might be wrong, might be 9 by 12. Might be. It looks like it's 6 by 9 to me. And they will say to you, male or female, go in there and let me see you fight. Well, if you have no fight in you, you're going to die, you know, and it's unbelievable, because we tease one guy, young sister, African-American, she was about 130 pounds, soaking wet. She said, I grew up with boys. They told her to go in the room. The dude was 6 foot, said, I don't want to hit you. She broke his jaw. You know, and so he couldn't wear that the rest of his career. His sister could fight, you know, fighting, and you'll learn the art. But fighting is very different than karate or anything else. Fighting is about survival, you know. And so they do have some things that I think builds character. But they also have some things. And I heard a brother say, well, they're running me harder than anybody else. I said, the first thing, if you tell me you want to go to the state police today, I say start running. Don't do push-ups. Don't do any strength. Just start running. You need that long, because everything is running. Calisthenics, running, push-ups, swimming. And so we've taken a look at where we fail and said, okay, let's put some things in place so you can learn to swim. You know you're going in the academy. Once you get, you can learn to swim. We can teach you that. We've got folks to teach you that. You know, one of the things, shooting. One of the reasons that I believe that we have such a high mortality rate in the hood, as we say. It's no longer a neighborhood. is because these guys can't shoot. They shoot at everybody, and 4 or 5 innocent people get shot. So the state police is an interesting animal. It really is. But you can come out of the state police in New Jersey, and you automatically get a bid in if you want to go to U.S. Marshals, you want to go to the FBI. A lot of the folks and Homeland Security, which is another big part of what I do. I'm also on the faith-based committee with Homeland Security. And this is something that's mind-blowing.
So what does that mean, to be on Homeland Security right out of the state police?
Well, Homeland Security is different than anything else, and we act every day. I get an update on anything that happens in the world every day. I get that update by email. I don't care if, whatever they're doing, but let me give you some of the simple things that we're looking at. Dealing with faith-based, and I think this is what's so interesting. We actually, in the state of New Jersey, have an Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and we have what we call a facility security measures for faith-based organizations. That is unbelievable. We also have an active shooters workshop for faith-based institutions. And why? Religious institutions are a real soft target. They're easy and they're weak. They're easy and weak. Real, real interesting.
Wow. Boy, I don't even know what to say after that.
Yeah. They're you dress a certain way, especially in the African American church, you show up, they'll bring you right to the front. Kill everybody. And we actually we don't think about that. The second easiest target is a daycare center. Is a daycare center. Think about it. ISIS has just put out recruiting here in the United States. They have never been successful with big bombs and that kind of stuff, but they've just put out a piece to say you need to get to the faith-based institutions and you need to kill as many of them as you can because they're easy to get into. Nobody locks up the doors of churches. You walk in, you're free to do whatever you want, especially in the African-American church. In a daycare center, it's usually a buzzer. It's no big thing. But what you want to do is you want to wreak as much havoc as you can wreak in one place. You start killing babies and the folks that take care of them, you've hit every mother of any child, anywhere. When you look at, we talk about the 5 L's in institutional safety: lights, locks, looks, leadership, and law enforcement. And there's different keys to all of those. But the reality is that so often we do things that we don't think about, and it has a lot to do. In recently, ISIS, not only did they do that, but a gentleman took them up on it. He shot himself in the foot while scouting out the place outside the church. Of course, someone in the church called for an ambulance. When they got to his car, they found the automatic weapons. They found the plans. If the dummy hadn't shot himself in the foot, how many folks can he kill? How many churches you know have fire drills?
I can't think of any. Bishop, if I might, what do you think is the attraction with ISIS, especially with your position, you being in a position where you can see firsthand what's going on to counter the input? What is your take? What do you think young people, regardless of what their racial denomination is, why are they attracted to this?
One of the things, and I've talked to a couple of folks, it's hatred. First of all, not knowing anything, and not a lot of people not really knowing even the history of this country, not knowing their history. Second, it's excitement. I can't imagine my sisters at 15. Well, we couldn't go anywhere anyhow, but at 15 on an internet, and I think that the fact that they can't shut it down says something. But it's adventure. It's fantasy land in the worst way. It's I know I'm a killer. I know I can handle this. I talked to a young man. I said, "Well, what happens?" Well, I can't fight in the streets. I said, "Well, join the army. You think that the discipline? You think they're just going to give you? And they might, but it's a culture that is looking for excitement and have no idea." What they're doing. I go back to being, you know, just a state police chaplain. I work with local law enforcement as well. So being with the state police, I do a lot of work with the prosecutor's office. And one of the craziest things, I asked the kid, "Why'd you shoot him?" And he said, "I want to be a great." You know, he wanted to be. He's a wannabe. He is, you know, and I'm going to deal with the reality. He is cuter than his sisters. He's a young brother, cuter than his sisters. He looks like a girl. I said, "Okay, you go in prison. I'm doing 50 years before I can even go before the parole board. I'm doing 50 years. I'm 26 years old, bench pressing 400 pounds, and you're the cutest thing I'm going to see for the next 50 years. What do you think I'm going to do with you? And you're 130 pounds, soaking wet. You know, what you think I'm gonna do with you? You know, what have you have any idea? And if you're in the gang, and since you really have only done little work and held little somebody, I'll pass you around for the next 15, 20 years." And he couldn't believe it. I said, "If you want to feel what it's like to shoot somebody, shoot yourself." And they said, "Bishop, you're off the hook." But it's an attraction to being a bad boy, to be a tough guy. It's an attraction. And that's it, it's an attraction. Let's take the young man in Boston who, and we actually looked at the case last week. Homeland Security Faith Based met, and his dad, who is a practicing Muslim, an imam in his own right, had no idea that his son was leaning on that other side. Fanaticism in not just Islam, you've got fanatic Christians, you've got fanatic whatever. If fanaticism brings about a sense of excitement and that your cause is right, and there's no ration, rhyme, or reason. And I think the attraction is an adventure. Mm. I think video games has taken us into a place where I want to see real blood and guts. I want to feel this thing for myself. But what's so scary to me since I've been on this faith-based thing, and who sits at the table is not just Homeland Security. It is the TSA. It is the FBI. It is, immigration. It's every alphabet that's there. It's the state police. It's the U.S. Marshals. Not only the Attorney General's people, but the U.S. Attorney is on this. And, you know, I could go on and on, but anybody, U.S. Marshals, everybody's at that table because everything now has to be shared. Some of the crazy stuff, I don't know if you're aware, Ku Klux Klan activity is a regular. I got an update today. Ku Klux Klan activity is a regular. I mean, we're not talking about that. That's homegrown terrorism. Every day, as I said, I get emails, and every day, this whole swatting thing, Now they're looking at that because somebody eventually is going to get killed, especially with the fear factor that goes on.
What is it called? What is that called? Swatting?
Swatting, where you call and say, you know, you're holding K and we need a SWAT team here. And so they've given the name SWAT.
Right.
Somebody shows, right, somebody's going to get killed doing this. And now it's happening here in New Jersey, as I said. It's crazy, but we get an update of whatever goes on in the world, not just New Jersey, in the world. And so that's how we know. Why have we developed some things? We have a program here in New Jersey called the Fleet Program. It's Future Law Enforcement something. But we started out with a suggestion and with myself and the president of the NAACP, saying, hey, let's take kids from the eighth grade on and have state troopers mentor them, FBI agents mentor them. Unbelievable. And we have like three chapters. We have one in Newark, we have one in Trenton, and we have one in Camden.
You know, Bishop James, if I can, you know, when we talk about Wayne asked a question, what attracted the terrorists, things like that. I'm just wondering also, because it seems to be a complicated thing. We're battling with a group. We're battling for the minds of people because clearly our superior firepower, our superior military arsenal is not enough to stamp out some people who feel that the United States, what the United States represents, the imperialism, the racism, all of these things, that people of color throughout the world can look at and kind of, if they wanted to be fanatical, they could look at and see who is the common enemy. Many, many times, a lot of these other forces in the world look at the United States as being the common enemy. And, you know, I've noticed, I'm sure that everybody else has noticed, that, you know, recently several of these individuals that have been arrested found out that they were trying to commit terrorist acts. At least two I've seen were African American, appear to be of African American descent. So I wonder if, and you have some appearing to be of Middle Eastern descent and things like that. But I'm wondering if even some of these groups, other than black people that come over here that are of minority, and that these kids get radicalized and fanaticized. I'm just wondering if some of it is part of a reaction to what America does to people of color and also the suggested foreign policy and the perspective that we have about the world. And as opposed to just some people, I mean, you have those individuals who just want to be bad boys and bad girls and do crime, and that's a whole another aspect of the glorification of that. But I'm just wondering if some of the issues that cause people to join these organizations aren't a lot deeper than just wanting to go out there and wreak havoc and create terror and chaos.
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head. Let me go back to my time. I was in college during the Vietnam War, and these folks were sending their babies out with bombs strapped on them, and they were so committed. We couldn't have won. But let's dig on the history. Every place we have gone, much like Britain, we went for what we could get. Iran, and everybody talks about Iran, but I remember the days of the Shah of Iran when they used to go back, and what he did, we supported him as long as he was giving us the oil. We didn't care that he cut off his people's heads and whatnot. And you have to understand, these people have taught their children and grandchildren and even great-grandchildren their history. You cannot talk to a Jewish person without his children knowing the Holocaust. You cannot talk to the Pope, and I give this one credit. We know, those of us that have studied history, that during World War II, that the Pope at that time sided with Hitler, and y'all do whatever y'all want to do to those people as long as you don't mess with ours. And the United States has a terrible history of every place they went taking resources and doing whatever. If you didn't have anything for them to get, they didn't care how the leadership. We supported people because of economics. We must remember that we are the only people that are totally forgiving about everything. When you look at slavery and talk about slavery in this country, let's talk about New York and the stock market. And they're wondering why found this graveyard there. Well, we were part of the stock that was being sold. You have to remember that the United States was an agricultural country. And when it was just 13 colonies at its inception, when they wrote the rules of the game, if you will, that great document called the Constitution, and I, we were two-thirds of a person. Why was it a stock market? Because now the Indians decided to raid back in the early 1700s when it went from New Amsterdam, sold by the Dutch, to New York. And so they built up a wall to overlook the river, and so the stock would not be stolen. The horses, the cows, the pigs. Yeah.
Right.
That's
a valid part of history. But the point I was making is that, as you said, when in the Vietnam era, when some of these people would, you know, strap bombs to their babies, that's in this current era of terrorism that we're experiencing, United States, we don't know that. Our rank and file citizens don't know the perspective that says, I am willing to take myself out just as long as I take you out. And that's what a lot of these terrorists and these people who commit these heinous acts have. They are, as you said, so committed to their cause, be it fanatical or crazy or whatever it is, they're willing to die as long as they take us out. And that's what I mean by we have a battle of minds, because that's something that with all our military might and all our strife and all our power that our troops aren't prepared to deal with. The man who's willing to take himself out just as long as he takes you out. That's why I suggest that it really is, we're really fighting a battle of the hearts and minds of people.
You're 100% correct. And as I said, they have told from generations, your great-granddaddy died and this and that. And when we look at our history, we're too busy saying, okay, all is well. I did 38 years and one day at Public Service Electric and Gas Company, retired an urban development executive. And it was interesting to me, worked on projects of diversity. And if you look at PSE&G, a $28 billion corporation, they're now in New York. I think they took over, maybe even larger at that now.
Bishop, I'm going to have to cut you off. Bishop, we're about, we've talked our way out of this show, and we are coming up on a minute. We want to thank Bishop General James for calling in and taking part in our discussion and our show tonight. Very eye-opening. A lot of things you have to say. We want to thank you, Bishop, for calling in.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you, Kay. We must have him back again. It was very informative.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will.
All right. Once again, this has been the Kay Thompson Live Show. You can reach us live every Wednesday evening at 8 to 9 p.m., or you can listen to the show anytime you want because the show is archived. You can go to blogtalkradio.com/Kay Thompson Live, and we want to thank once again Wayne Gilman, our co-host, Bishop Jethro James, our guest. I'm the other co-host. My name is Eric Payne, and you are, as always.
My name is Kay Thompson, and we're glad to have you on listening. I'm at a loss for words because this is really so scary,
You're at a loss for words because we're out of time. There we go. Thanks for listening, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again next week, and maybe we'll have some music. Bye-bye now.